Blog Talk Radio.
I'm sorry to kind of abruptly end that there, but I wasn't sure how long it would go on. I didn't know if anybody would know that was us, but that's some pretty cheerful music to get us started on a cheerful topic of love and marriage. This is Joy. I'm in Austin, where we're having a little break in the weather here on September 1st, and I'm glad about that. We had some record-breaking heat this summer, so we're ready for a little fall to come rolling in. I want to take just a second to thank all of you for being here. I know there's lots of places you can go and things you can do to use your time, and we really appreciate the fact that you choose to spend some time with us each week. We've had some interesting discussions about different current events and political things and how religion ties in with politics and just all kinds of emotional, stressful type topics, but my nephew and Wild Bill's son, James, is going to be getting married in a month, and that's got us all thinking romantic thoughts. So this week we're going to have a sweet subject of love and marriage. There's all kinds of love, the love I have for my nephew and my brother and my child and my country and my president, and so many different ways we can love, but one of my favorites is certainly romantic love. I have the best husband in the world, so this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart. We, without further hesitation, we'll let Wild Bill get us kicked off.
Hey, Joy, what did you think about the song?
It was cheerful. Made me think of Six Flags.
Yeah, that's an advertisement for Six Flags, but I thought with me being out here in the truck and, you know, coming in, I thought, wow, that kind of could be a good theme song. But I was thinking of all the different love songs, and I went through a few hundred of them to put on there. And
love and marriage, love and marriage.
Yeah, I got to thinking about, you know, going back to ancient times, how when I first was looking at love and, you know, noticing girls and how that, you know, I thought the old people just really didn't have a clue. They just, you know, we had our own little thing going. You know, I remember the first time I was sitting in a church and I felt someone looking at me and looked up and saw this girl looking at me, and I looked at her, and then just as I was fixing to look away, she looked away first. So I'm like, oh, that's how that works. If I don't look away, they will. So that's a little lesson here to mark down and learn. But I thought all the old folks, you know, they gave you all this advice, and, you know, they told you the do's and don'ts, and I thought they just don't have a clue. This is the love, like the love songs are written about. You know, this is romance, like, the movies and books and all the things that you read, they don't have a clue. And what I didn't realize was is most of the people that wrote those songs and wrote those movies and wrote those books were people that had been around before. And if you really want to get down to the depth of it, there's love is something that started back with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And I know that there's probably people saying, like, I bet tonight we're not going to talk about the Bible. We finally got a topic and he won't go to the Bible. But one of the things that when you look at love and marriage that you have to look at was, you know, we know about the legality of marriage and everything like that, but God ordained marriage back at the beginning of time. And so in one way to look at marriage and leave God out of it is sort of like trying to hold back a river or using let's rephrase that. That'd be like trying to use a screen door in a submarine to keep the water out, because there's a whole lot more to love and marriage than what initially meets the eye. And I can remember what it's like to be sitting there and getting lost in someone's eyes across the table while you're at Pizza Hut, and all of a sudden you realize that neither one of you have said anything for a long time. You just got lost. You forgot, you know, where you were and everything. And you're like, oh, young love, you know, nothing like it. And, of course, you can, you know, go and remember what it was like to, you know, be passing them in a doorway or something and accidentally brush their arm, and all of a sudden your heart would miss a beat, and maybe you felt that knot in your stomach and everything. Those are not unique to just being young. Those are things that, you know, we all know. And I was really surprised with all the things you were saying there, Joy, that you didn't jump into the fact that, and it's a song, all we need is love, and all of us need love. But love is one of those things you hear everyone talk about, that you can fall in love, you can fall out of love, and, you know, I'm in love, I'm going to get married. And one of the things that I learned a long, long time ago, and there again, everyone, this is from my perception, and so other people's perceptions is probably going to be a little bit more normal than mine, because I seem to be a little abnormal on everything. But I told all my children when, that sounded like a soap opera, but anyway, I told all my children that they should never date anyone that they wouldn't want to be married to. And what I've learned through time and experience is that anybody can just about fall in love with anybody else in the right circumstances and situations. I mean, I can remember one time where my mom introduced me to this girl that I thought was ugly. And the girl wasn't interested in me. And something about that whole thing there set up a challenge. And so all of a sudden I was like, she's going to like me. You know, you're not going to just let that go. And a lot of it has to do with circumstances and times, you know, what's going on in your life as to where you are. And unfortunately for me, circumstances and time and the illusion of what I thought marriage was compared to love caused me and some people in my life a lot of grief, because I had this fantasy in my brain of what love was and romance and all the things that went with that. And then, you know, I thought how that would just go into marriage, and it would be just like the ending of a good book, you know, where everybody lives happily ever after. But the hard part of the whole thing is when you're young, and that's why I had that song on here, is because I wanted everyone to remember what it's like to be living large. Just what I used to say with Jared and Matt when they were in high school, you're just living large, because everything is all about you. You know, there's other people that come in and out of your life. There's other experiences that come along. But pretty much your life is all about you, what you want, what you feel, what you think you need. And it's kind of hard to draw that line between need and want at that age. It all sort of becomes the same thing. That's why you end up going off with some friends for the weekend, and you, before you know it, you realize that you've talked so much over the weekend, you've lost your voice. You know, because you're wanting to take advantage of every moment you have when there's something fun going along in your life. And so with love, anything that you can fall into, you can fall out of. And the difference, there's a huge difference between love and marriage. And to prove a point on that, you know, used to, marriages were arranged. you know, people would send off for mail order brides. Hey, I got a pig farm over here in Arkansas, and I got me a log cabin, and I'm looking for a bride that'd like to come up here and live with me that don't mind doing a little gardening and don't mind the way my pigs smell, you know. And people would get together on stuff like that, and it would work, you know. People went out west, and they had mail order brides, and then they used to do the mail order brides from across the country, and then there used to be prearranged marriages, and these things worked just about as well as what it does with us trying to make a choice. And my situation was one to where it was really funny, and I hope nobody else is as deranged as I was. I was getting close to being 20 years old. I was 19, and I thought, wow, I'm going to be 20 years old. I'm going to be old, and I'm not married yet. Now, what either one of those two things have to do with the other, I look back now, I thought, you know, was it the time I fell off the house when I was roofing with my friends, and I fell off in that hole in the septic tank, and I bounced off the truck? Did something jar loose then? Or, you know, what made me put those two things together like it should be important? And I came into a situation where I met a young lady who was very attractive, and we seemed to really click, and she was someone that, in my mind, needed rescuing. She lived in a home where they treated her like she was 12 years old. It was a structure that was like, man, you know, just, I mean, she couldn't even decide what she was going to eat for the day. I mean, you know, it was just unreal. And so I saw myself as riding in on my white horse, going to rescue this damsel in distress. And we got married, and what I found out that's different from all the stories and everything is that marriage is not a feeling, it's a commitment. And if you don't make the commitment, because love, the emotion of love comes and goes. I mean, me and Joyce talked about that a lot. There's days that you feel really good about your spouse. There's days you're like, wonder if anybody knows if I put a pillow over their head. You know, I mean, it's hard. You know, it's the thing with marriage is always you got to make a commitment where the two become one. And so that's why I told my kids, I said, you should always date someone that you would want to marry, because you need to look in advance and see if you're going in the same direction. See if you have the same concepts in the way you were raised and the way you look at things. Because if not, it's unfair to think that you're going to marry someone, get a piece of paper, and immediately change them into being what they're not. And there's going to be a lot of storm involved. But in my situation, what I did was I came to the rescue, but I didn't really rescue anybody. Because, and I had people come to me. I had the youth pastor from my church that told me, he says, there's things to this situation that you're not aware of. You don't need to do this. Did I listen? No. You know, I had other people say, you know, you need to think about this. You need to pray about it. And I did. And I'm like, Lord, I'm fixing to marry this girl, and I want you to make it work. And I want you to bless us. And that was the kind of prayers that I prayed. It wasn't like seeking God's face and saying, you know, Lord, should I be doing this or anything? And I remember, it's real funny, you think of all the romantic things that's going to lead up to a wedding. Not me. There was a big blow up into where something else came down as a new rule on her in her home. And I thought, you know, this is it. I'm taking her away from here. And so that's what I did. And so what did I do? I go out there and I got this vision in my head of what marriage is. And I've got this woman who's leaning on me to take care of her, and I'm her rescuer. And what I found out is that she didn't change who she was before I met her. And I was so wrapped up into myself and everything that there was really no way for there to be the concept of marriage at all, because there was no give and no take. We went through the dating thing, which everybody always puts on their best towards the other person when they're dating. But it's kind of like after you say I do, you're like, wow, things change. And, you know, I was really big into sports and playing with the guys. Man, I could play basketball all night long, or if they had a baseball game or football game on the weekends or something like that, and I didn't have to work, I was there. But I had taken a vow that I was going to be there for this other person, And I didn't honor that vow. And the bad thing about that is that we had two children. And I have two exceptional boys, you know, from that marriage. And that's probably the only blessing that came from it, because here I was, because with time, with a marriage like this, and this is where I said when I was talking about speaking from love and marriage from experience, I've done just about everything wrong that you could possibly do wrong. And looking back at it, you know, I came to the rescue, I took this woman off, I married her, and then, you know, here she was used to having structure and having someone to lean on. And I joined the United States Army, which kept me constantly going out in the field for maneuvers and things, and that didn't work for her, and I couldn't understand why it didn't work for her. And I ended up having to, it didn't work with my military career. And so you'd think I would have learned something and picked a career to make this work. Well, I didn't. I went into law enforcement, and I had some resentment over the military thing, and I'm sure she has some resentment over the military thing. And so here I get off into another occupation where you never know what you're going to do from one moment to the next, what your job is going to be. And, you know, there's a possibility you may not even come home. Well, that doesn't add stability into a life of someone that really needs to lean on someone for stability. So in looking at it from this side of it and everything, I was not a rescuer. Instead, I was more of a hindrance to trying to help her live the life that she needed to have. And so with that said, we ended up getting a divorce. And that's the painful part. You know, you have this dream of ever after, everything being good. But when you got children, you go through a divorce, it's hard on everybody. I mean, it's not, nobody wins. It's like Dad used to tell me in a fight, you know, they always say in some things there's winners and losers in a fight. Nobody wins. You know, if it's a real fight, everybody's going to be scuffed up a little bit. You know, it's not going to be a win situation. And that's definitely the way it was here. You get family involved in it and all the storms that goes along with it. And there again, I was still leaving God completely out of the whole situation. And you think I would have learned from that, but no, see, Bill was still living large. You know, he's still feeling good. I'm still young. You know, I've got these boys. I got this job that I'm really enjoying being in law enforcement. And I've got new friends. And, you know, it's, and I'll tell you something else, too. When you get married, only stay around your friends that are married. And even be careful then, because what happens is you get to telling your friends about a fight or an argument or something that went wrong or something in your relationship, they're always going to tell you, I'd leave her. I wouldn't put up with that and everything. It's the strangest thing, and maybe I'm the only one that had friends like that, but it seemed like your friends all are jealous of what you got that's good instead of being in your corner, and it's like they used the saying, misery loves company. Everybody gets to pushing you into making wrong choices, because that was a part that didn't really stick in my head. It was a commitment, you know, the for better or worse. And, you know, that part of it just really did not lock in. And so because of that, you know, here all of a sudden I'm single again. So what do I do then? I find somebody that I think is like a buddy, a good friend. Well, you know, what happened there? I didn't take time to get to know this person, anything about them. And they had certain things in their personality to where they had a low self-esteem issue. So what happens there? We start having problems. You know, my partner starts looking for ways to get self-esteem from someone else because I don't speak the love language that works for her. And so I end up going through failed marriage number two. And then all of a sudden, I got into a situation where I wasn't in a hurry to get married. And Joy, she laughs at me all the time. She's always like, what does it make you think you got to live with somebody? What does it make you think you got to be married? And I wish that was something that I could answer. I was never one, I don't know what I was trying to build up to and everything, but I had this illusion that I needed to be with someone. But this time, I found someone that had a brain of their own and was quick to point out that if I had an idea that went astray from anything as far as building a relationship, it was pointed out to me. And it wasn't always to do what I wanted to do, but it was an inspiring thing to inspire me to want to be better, to want to do better. And thankfully, God moved in her life and got her in, because I'd been running from God for years. And she started going to church and was faithful with it, even though I wasn't being faithful with it. And that's one of those things, you know, talking about the God thing. God deals with people on a personal level, and he had my number, and so he drew me back in. But through all of this now, I've got children, I got stepchildren, and you can't go through those things without it changing your life. And you think about the strain it puts on you, the mental, the financial, the stress of, you know, feeling responsible and wanting to do the right thing and not knowing what the right thing is. And then you got the in-laws and, as you say, the outlaws on the other part of the family, you know, that you're trying to deal with, and all these different personalities. And so now all of a sudden your children are having to contend with some of those things. And I can really say that my kids have done a whole lot better than what I ever thought of doing in the whole process. It's like, I don't know, it's like, I'd like to think that because of the extra prayers that went in, and that they were able to see my mistakes and the errors and judgment that I made, and were able to go along with that. But, and maybe some people would disagree with me, but I don't think that you can put love and marriage as saying that they're the same thing. I think that one can lead to the other, but that love, it doesn't have any commitment to it. Love can be built on emotion. It can be built on, you know, like in my mind, it was fantasy of what I thought a relationship was, you know, versus what a relationship really is. And marriage is pretty much set in stone. I mean, you say a vow to be committed to somebody. And if you use the one that pretty much everyone does, it makes it clear that sickness and health, you know, whether, you know, the finances are there, you know, all these things that you agree to go along with it. It doesn't say anything about waking up and feeling like you've fallen out of love with somebody. And Hollywood has done such a big job on trying to promote that it's okay to fall out of love, you know, because maybe you got married for the wrong reasons and things like this. But at the stage of life that I'm at right now, to go back and look at everything, and when we were talking about this being joy the other day, trying to dissect the choices I made in my life and what I was feeling and why I did it, looking at it from my perspective, and the first thing that jumps to my mind was I didn't have any sense getting married. I should have never considered getting married until I was probably 30 years old, because I wasn't anywhere close to being grown up emotionally. I was not stable in that way at all. I grew up in a sheltered home, and I had an illusion of how things were. I mean, in some ways, I wasn't even ready to go out into the workforce. You know, when I went out to go out for my first job and everything, you know, I learned how to fill out an application at school, but I didn't have a clue, you know, as to how to present myself in anything. I was fairly confident. I didn't have a problem there. So what in the world made me think that I was going to be able to be the leader of a household, to head out and put a marriage together? I'm clueless. I don't know what in the world was going through my mind. But there again, I still think that I'm going to blame that on Russell Henson, that I was working with him and I fell off that house we were roofing and it bounced off the side of his truck and fell in that hole. I think something must have jarred loose that day, but I'm not real sure. But what are your thoughts on some of this, Joy? I mean, I know we were talking about this the other day about, you know, the commitments, and, of course, you've been there through all of my life as a keen observer to point out
the rude, things. Judgmental little sister, always there to point out your flaws. Well, I think I have a much more romantic viewpoint than you do, that's for sure. I think love is the entire point. I think you can overcome anything else if you really love somebody. And, of course, I really, really, really do love my husband so much, and he's the only person that I've ever loved. Although romance was always sort of my favorite part of life. If there's one thing that's always gone pretty well for me, that's been it. But my husband's the only person I've ever loved, and I think that that has overcome. You know, we did come from completely different backgrounds, and we were young, not as young. We were both, I was 24 and he was 23 when we got married, so it wasn't like we were little babies.
You were 19, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, we had a little bit more, but I think I was a pretty young 24. But, and of course, yeah, like you said, there have been some huge ups and downs and roller coaster ride moments, but I think what got us through all that was the fact that I love him and he loves me.
Yeah, well, I don't want to take love out of it. I believe in romance and everything, and in some ways I like to think of myself as a hopeless romantic. I like making CDs with love songs on it and giving it to Starla and,
aww,
you know, just let her know I'm thinking about her and things like that. So, I mean, I really, you know, like that part of it, and I do believe that it's love that keeps you through, but there is an illusion of love, and there again, this could be the boy-girl thing, you know. My mother likes to point out that she likes to give me different books to read, and she tells me all these things. But I found out in a lot of people's situations, when women read a book, they're looking at it to pick out what the man needs to change. And if a man does take the time to read a book on something like that, you know, he's looking for ways to change himself, which that doesn't quite fit everybody. But, I mean, that's what I get tickled. Mom used to come in and she's like, I read a new book, and Dad used to teach her and say, all right, what am I doing wrong now?
Yeah, but I'm not that way, and I'm a girl. I always am very resistant to you and Mama trying to break everything down to the man-woman thing, and I think that's because it seems like I fall more often on the man stereotype of things than the other side. But, yeah, Mama, we will accuse that of you of that, of reading books and finding out what's wrong with everybody else.
At least she reads books. So
I can open up her mic so she can defend herself. You haven't pressed one, Josie, but I've got you open just in case you decide you need to jump in.
Am I in?
Yes.
Well, since I was married to your dad, I have to be careful what I say, but
he'll haunt you?
In chemistry.
We'll tell.
Well, he just doesn't have a chance to defend himself.
Oh, he's got me in Wild Bill.
The chemistry with Jim was unbelievable for me. We were good for each other, and that we were almost like an antidote to the situation we were in when we met each other, and we both really desired to come up out of the place we were in when we married. We wanted to have a nice home, and I can say that Jim was the hardest worker. He had, he might use profanity, but he wouldn't in the home or with the family. As far as he respected his home, and he respected me. We had problems, but there was an integrity there, a respect, and I wouldn't take. I do marriage counseling, but I deal with a lot of different situations. But I quote Jim a lot when I'm talking with people. There was a young man using profanity the other day, and I said, my husband was probably one of the strongest man's man that you'll ever find, but he wouldn't, if someone was using profanity around his family, he just wouldn't allow it. You know, he'd give him a chance to stop. But that respect, I think if you respect, or at least make somebody feel like you respect them. And the books, now y'all give me a bad rap on that, because I was hanging on by a thread, I tell you what. And
even now, I've teased you about that. You know how you do, kind of, but you did used to do it back then too. You just sort of find what's wrong with other people a lot.
Well,
kind of diagnose other people.
Interpret it, you know, so I could deal with it, not to manipulate, but to, you know, if someone's doing something that is causing you a lot of pain, psychological or whatever, physical, and you can find out that hurting people hurt people, and you know, you can't.
But as opposed to reading something and seeing, like, how it applies to you, sometimes it seems like you have a little bit more of a tendency to see how it applies to everybody else.
Well, I'm
sorry. Yeah, and I don't want to put down the book thing either, because one of the things, I don't believe anybody should ever get married now without going through some sort of marital class first to understand exactly what they're getting into, both of them, to where they can, you know, have someone that's professional that understands the right questions to ask to get them to look at the beginning to see if they're, you know, willing to go in the same direction, to go past the emotional thing of what they feel. And like Charlotte, she's, you know, I wasn't aware that different people have different love languages. And she, you know, there's a book on that. And, you know, so she was quick to go in there. It's really funny, though, because when you're dealing with men and women, things change from one day to the next. And so one day, you know, I hear say, well, you know, this is my love language. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, she's like, well, this is my love language. And then she'd come back and like, well, maybe both of those are my love language. I'm like,
I'm a little bit
okay.
That way. Is that true, Mama, that we all want all of the love languages, but
well,
you've just got a main one, right?
Right.
But
there's a primary. You have a primary love language, and we do, but there are different times, you know, that I guess something would mean more than another, than something else. Sometimes if you're really lonely, then you would appreciate quality time with somebody. And other times when you're really, really busy, that you might not be feeling that need. And so if somebody complimented you, gave you words of affirmation, at that point, that might be really what you need more than them spending time with you. So it would feel like that would be. But
and like mine is the words of affirmation. My second one is quality time. Both of those mean to me. That says to me that somebody loves me. But then every once in a while, and like gifts is not one for me. It doesn't really mean love for me. But then there have been certain gifts and things that Ashton's done that have really made me feel very loved, even though that's not my primary thing. Whereas like some people, if you get the gift wrong, it's really a lot more meaningful to them because they're looking at that for a different, that's what says you love somebody, and I don't even get that. And like act of service, I think that actions, that was one of the things I learned from the love language thing, because it does mean that he cares about me, but it's just not going to set my heart all aflutter. But you can set his heart aflutter in a heartbeat by washing his car or something.
Well,
I think most men look at that same way. I mean, you know, for someone to do something that's not the norm for you, that, you know, that's definitely, I think, just about every man I've ever met, that's one of their love languages. That shows that it means something.
Yeah.
And, but there again, you know, like you say, there's times where, you know, you don't, that's the funny thing of it. One day you could be really being the one that's needy to get something extra from your partner, and then the next time you could be really on that thing where you kind of need your space, and then all of a sudden they're used to needy just a couple of days before, and so they're wanting to be right there, and you're like, I need my space. You know, and it's the same two people, it's the same love, and it's the same marriage. That's just part of it. Charlotte had a real good thing though with me. Go ahead.
I'll hold on to my.
She told me when we got married, she told me it was going to be till my death do we part. So.
I think that what you were just saying is one of the things that really is beautiful about relationship, because your primary relationship, your partner in life, is the person that is bringing up all the stuff that you need to have brought up, and it's not always going to be smooth because they're going to be triggering things that need to be triggered. They're the person that you're most intimate with, the person that you're closest with, who sees all of your ups and downs. So working through all of that, understanding that it doesn't mean that somebody doesn't love you just because they need some time to themselves, or, you know, just all of that as we mature, you do fall. I think I heard somebody say that just 100% of the time, that especially chemistry, it just does not last. But I don't believe that because I love Afshin. I am in love with Afshin more than I've ever been. I'm deeply in love with him, and I'm more attracted to him, and all of those things are better than they've ever been. So I just don't believe that.
I don't either.
But your husband works as a pharmacist, so I'm sure he's putting a little something extra in your coffee to keep you in line.
That's not funny.
What were you going to say, Mom, though? You don't think that's true either?
I think if you really are in love with someone, I mean, I think there's infatuations, and, you know, I don't really know all the answers for everything, but for your dad and myself, when, you know, we had been separated, but when we came back together for because of his sickness, nothing had ever changed. The chemistry, as far as alcohol chemistry, but my love for him was as strong as it ever was. And it's just awesome. I mean,
Daddy are another example of really the romantic thing. That even though in a lot of ways you wouldn't have matched if you looked at you on paper, y'all had such a strong love that it carried you through life.
And there was a lot of, I had to become aware of codependency, of what codependency was, and how by being codependent, I was putting you ask your mate to be something that no one can do. Only God can fulfill certain for me, only God could fulfill what I needed to stand alone and not, you know, if people are too needy with each other or they expect too many things that are not reasonable, then it begins to drain the marriage like a battery. It just drains it, like Bill was saying about trying to make someone be there all the time. People need
right.
their space. They need to be creative. And your dad, and I guess most men, but he liked to achieve. He was an achiever, and he liked to just do things that were man type things. I guess like when men go hunting and fishing and things like that, that is a part of them that women shouldn't, be jealous of. You know, just all of us need those times, even though we're married. And I enjoyed, you know, Jim always supported anything from church, outreach, music, anything that I really desired to do. He was my best encourager.
And they can be showing their love by doing those manly things. Like that's
yeah.
their family and they're doing. And you said something else made me think of something, but now I've drawn a big blank. About having this expectation that the person that you love is going to just completely fill out your personality and you're just going to be happy and glowing all the time because now you're in love. I had that big time, that because I hadn't fallen in love with anybody else, and now I was in love and he loved me, and so if I wasn't just saturated in just romantic bliss every minute, I was mad or upset or crying or, you know, I thought something was wrong. I expected him to just know what I was thinking, be obsessed with my every thought and, you know, listen to me talk for hours and all of that. And, of course, he would try. He really would try, but he would nod off or lose interest. And then I would just be devastated. It's the end of the world. Or if I ever felt lonely or felt. But I do think that there's a, you know, I don't know if maybe I might fall into y'all's man-woman thing on that. I don't know if men are as apt to think that now that you're in love, you're going to be completely fulfilled by that love. I don't know. But I definitely had that and had to. But I think you do have to get strong emotionally in yourself and find out that another person is not responsible for your happiness or your fulfillment, even though they're contributing to it or they can contribute to your unhappiness. Ultimately, your spiritual walk and your psychological walk is your own, and you're going to have
right.
to take that from the inside out.
That's right.
Funny. Starla, you know, she used to tell me, she's like, I'll say, I'm not happy. She's like, well, if you can't make yourself happy, I can't make yourself happy. And I you know, I was like a dog gnawing on a bone with that. I was like, that kind of makes sense. You know,
annoyingly, that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, so I was like, darn, that girl's smart.
Starla, I see you there. If you want to press 1, we'll bring you into the fray. If you decide you need to defend yourself, go ahead, Bill. So she's already pressed 1. I'm going to open up her
mic. That expression is, you're either happy or you're not. Nobody can make you happy.
That's good.
That's okay, I'm gnawing on it again.
Yeah, and like, you know, you say, he made me mad, or he makes me crazy, or, you know, any kind of emotion, even though we are all contributing to each other's state. On the other hand, we're all responsible for our own state, too.
Right.
Yeah, and that's a tough lesson right there, because you get to thinking, okay, if, say, your spouse provokes you and makes you mad, you know, you think that, well, you know, in law enforcement, they had a phrase called fighting words. If someone provoked you to a certain level, you had a lot to fight, you know, and that would stand up in court. You know, I took my flashlight and I cracked him over the head because he provoked me with fighting words. And in a relationship with people, in marriage, one of the hardest things to realize, and that was a separation thing between law enforcement and real life, is that at home you're not enforcing law. At home, you're building relationship, and you're either adding to or taking away every day. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's no in-betweens. You're doing one of the two. And so there would be different things that would come up, and I'm like, you know, she's provoking me. She's making me angry. But that no matter what anybody else does, whatever, no matter what they make you feel, you are still always responsible and accountable for your actions.
Right.
No one can make you do anything, although Sam Kennison, they used to always pick on him and say, why do you pick on women all the time? He's like, because a man never made me want to take my car and drive it into a wall at 100 miles an hour. You know, so, you know, there could be a little humor to some of that stuff, but, and it applies to everything. You know, if you look at it to, am I adding to my relationship with what I'm saying or what I'm doing, or am I taking it away? And one of our biggest arguments we used to have with Sola's love language is words of affirmation, at least it is sometimes. I'm not sure what it is today. I keep saying I'm going to get those Navy flags so she can hold it up so I can know what to expect for the day when I come home.
Well, but that's not a very good start right there. So you've already dug yourself a little hole.
Yeah.
That's me. I'm digging a little hole. But anyway, he was like, you're so negative on things. Why are you so negative? I'm like, okay, now how can I use words for affirmation for something that I don't agree with what's done? And that's one of those things that I still ain't got the answer to. So I realized if you can't say something nice, what does Sola say? Don't say anything at all.
Well, that's not true. You have to communicate everything, but you're just meaning in general? He's just kind of yeah, and saying all these negative things that aren't really productive?
Yes.
But you don't want him to just hold it in if he's got something to say, do you? So I was like, yes. Hold it in. Rainbow said something in the chat room I'm going to read because it's good. Loving someone doesn't mean personal fulfillment. It means there's another person on this planet whose happiness or lack thereof has a direct relationship to your own.
That's good.
Okay. All right, now back to attacking Wild Bill about his whole
day. All
right.
My psychosis.
Let's hear the story.
But it is confident.
Josie's got a story.
Okay.
You've heard it, but it's about the, you know, years and years ago, the lady that, then the man, they made an agreement that if he came home and she'd really had a bad day and she was really, you know, grumpy, that she would take her apron and she would roll it up and then, you know, he'd know that it's just, you know, cool it. So, and he'd said, now I'll take my hat and I'll turn it around sideways or something and you'll know that I've had a bad day and you can cool it. And that worked real, real good until one day his hat was turned sideways and her apron was rolled up.
Oh.
That was funny, y'all.
They just need to go their separate ways that day, huh?
That's right. I got another.
All right, Bill, were you going to defend yourself?
In a minute.
I'm beyond being defended, I think. It's just, you know, I'm the typical man in a lot of ways, but, you know.
And three women here.
Yeah, when it comes to women, you don't, you know, we think we understand and we really don't have a clue.
I don't think men and women are all that different. I think that everybody wants to be respected. I think, of course, there are some basic differences, but I think on the most part, we want all the same things.
Well, if Jim Lowdy was here, he would say, if you want to see the main difference, go shopping with a woman.
Well, even that, I don't really like to shop. Mama will tell you I'm even more like a man on that.
I see, Starla, we'll be going along, and we start off at one side of the store, and we're working across, and then all of a sudden, like, oh, I forgot to.
Oh, you mean grocery shopping. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Any kind
I've already
shopping.
Defended you on this one, Starla.
And I'm like, why can't we just go in order from one side of the store to the other?
But see, that's not true to say that all women shop that way because Starla shops that way. I don't like this whole painting genders by the brush with the one.
So do you not do that? Go partway through the store, then all of a sudden go back because you forgot something, and then.
No, but you also said you don't like people to go on every aisle. You want them to go whatever aisle they want to go on, and I do usually hit every aisle just in case there's something that I've forgotten. But I don't go back. But
it's not good for me to do that when I'm hungry, but that's usually what I do. I hit every aisle, and I see what jumps out at me, and then I get to the cash register, and it's like, that's $400 and something. Like, man, I must have been hungry.
And then that jumps out at you. Yeah, I've been there, not quite that much, but, yeah, you can shock yourself.
Well, the one thing we have to all admit is there's nothing like relationships, you know, that especially when you're with someone that you know is in your corner, you know, that no matter what, they're on your side. You know, there's nothing like that in the world.
Exactly. It does add meaning to everything else that you do. And I think that your partner in life just enhances everything. Everything there. I heard somebody say that they're your spiritual partner, and I like that because you are just in there together. And as you go through things and you weather life's storms and you see the character in the other person and the way they deal with things, and like you said, the fact that they've always got your back, and it just gets deeper and deeper and more amazing, and the love just gets more and more.
Yeah. The other part of that is from going through this and being married before, a lot of people, what happens is if you've been married before and you get married again, this is really funny. I bet that you're going to find that 90% of the people are looking to mimic in their new relationship all the things they like in their first relationship, and then they were just wanting to change the things that were bad. And so... And I've seen this from both directions. A lot of times, Starla would say something to me, I'm like, that wasn't me. And I say something to her, she's like, that wasn't me. I've not ever been that way. I'm not ever going to be that way. You know, where's this coming from? And so you have a tendency to want to change people into what, there again, it's that illusion. You know, there were certain things, like in my second marriage, she supported everything that I did as far as accomplishments, and that motivated me. I was able to do things, but we weren't building anything towards a relationship between us. We weren't building a strong marriage. We were two independent people living together that I was being supported with the direction I wanted to go. And I'm probably not wording it right. You're like, wow, that sounds like that'd be a fantastic thing. But in the relationship I'm in now, it's not always the way I want to go and the way I want things to be, but it's always pushing me to be better. It's always pushing me to build for the family. It's always, you know, it's a motivation there that may be a little bit more uncomfortable for me. It may not be quite as natural for me, but it's not something that's a negative either. It's a positive. And so that's the part, that's what was missing in the other relationships that I had. Here I was coming to the rescue.
It does go for your growth, even though it's not. Yeah, yeah. That's kind of what I mean by spiritual partners. It doesn't always feel exactly good, but they are there to mirror back to you, honestly, what needs to be mirrored back. And that's
little sisters are pretty good at that, too.
And mamas. Mama, you're going to have to talk louder. I can hear you're trying to get something in there.
No, I like what you said, though, because... if people would just, instead of trying to pull away from the situation, but, you know, just learn what they can by it, then they're going to be better, and the marriage will be better, and the children will be better, everything will be better, because you can't just avoid change. It doesn't feel good, but it's always better to change And I appreciate, I know Jim was such an influence on me. When I started the church, he told me, he wanted me to dress differently, you know, because we're sort of demonstrative, or not sort of, we're really very demonstrative in Pentecost. And he said, you know, I think you need to wear a jacket and when you're going to be up in front of everybody. And he just had just a lot of wonderful things that he influenced me as we lived together. And he liked my cooking. I didn't cook a lot, but he did like it.
What's not to like? You're a great cook.
And he, you know, don't
his dad would say whenever she'd cook.
Both
yeah,
because
you only cook like 5 times a week, right, Mom?
Yeah.
I'll back you up on that. 5 times a week for 30 years. I don't think you deserve the reputation for not cooking.
That was just Dad's sarcastic humor. He had to throw that out there, so I didn't want him to be left out.
It is
funny, the relationship thing between the man and the woman, but the other part of that is the children.
Yeah.
And, you know, I grew up in a situation where I had a stepdad where it didn't really feel like a stepdad. You know, he played ball with me. He taught me how to do things. And, you know, he wasn't one of those people that was really like hands-on with cars and things like that. But, you know, he did share with me things, you know, like he had that need for speed thing in him when he was younger, too. And, you know, we talked about things like that. And, you know, he's always picking me about my shortcuts and things. But the relationship was there.
Plus, you didn't have any other dad.
Well, that's true because, you know, my real dad had passed away. So I guess that sort of had some bearing on it. And so I also didn't have the extra set of, you know, the grandparents and stuff pulling against each other and everything, too. You know, everybody trying to be the dominant person to be in control. But
right.
The victims of it's always the kids, because even in the best situation, and even with Dad, there was things to where, you know, he used to make comments how he was judged for things that he did when, you know, his thought process was nowhere close to what it was. And now I know firsthand what that feels like. There's things that, you know, I've tried to do with the kids, you know, because the man, you think, well, I got to make them a man. You know, I got my perception of, you know, got to be strong and you got to be firm and all these things that go a lot against what the moms want to do. They want to nurture. And so it becomes a thing to where all of a sudden you're like, you know, well, you know, where are you coming from with this? Why are you doing this? And so what happens is then you get divided in the home, and then the kids suffer. Because kids are not stupid. They're going to play the game to get the most out of what they could get anybody and everybody.
Manipulate.
But somehow when the parents and grandparents and everybody gets playing all the games, then there gets to be a thing of, it's like you got to pick sides, there's power struggles, who's right, who's wrong. And then, plus, they got to build up their own thought process as to what is love, what's marriage, what's relationships and everything, what's family, with all these things going on. And so the one thing I would tell everybody and anybody is don't get married till you're ready. Don't date somebody you don't want to be married to. And get out of the house and get you your own home and have your own bills and establish yourself before you try to do those things for two people and build a family. That if more people would do that, then I think that, because I didn't even have a real big, I don't even know how to word this, my perception of the real world was not real at all. You know, so as far as what you could do, when it's kind of like Jared, you know, he was sitting there after he got on his own a little bit. He's like, man, nothing's free anymore. You know, well, guess what? It never was. Somebody was, you know, paying the bills before. And I had that big time. You know, I was so sheltered and, you know, everything was provided for us. And, you know, we did little odd jobs and, you know, made extra money for things. But it was ours, you know. No one, you know, it was, you know, what we had to do, whatever we wanted to do with it. And
right.
So it that whole concept of love and everything is one of those things. And there again, of course, I know I'm throwing religion out there, but to me, to look at what marriage is supposed to be and leave God out of it is one of those things that it will not mix. It just will not work. And I'm sure there's people out there right now saying, "Well, I don't even believe in God, and I got a marriage and it's working fine and everything." And I'm not trying to say that, but it's one of those things. It's like,
actually, I think Rainbow did
better.
Say something like that.
Oh, did she?
I'm trying to, somewhere in here, I think she did mention that her marriage is working just fine. Oh, go ahead. Oh, Blog Talk
Rainbow,
Mom,
we ain't picking on you.
She just had an emergency call from the nursing home, just to let you know.
Uh-oh.
Okay, now that I've interrupted your thoughts, sorry.
No, that's okay. We're getting close to the end of the time, and if nobody else has anything to want to say, I do want to, you know, thank all of our callers again. We wanted to lighten it up a little bit, you know, kind of go out to you if anyone had any advice for things they wanted to throw out there.
I wish James would have called. Maybe with his Sarah, we could have gotten to know her a little bit. But just in case you're listening to the archive, we'll just say congratulations, and we can't wait until the wedding. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, really. Big time. One thing, our show next week is going to be on our military again, is where the focus is. And this sort of, you know, we've talked with military personnel, my son in the past, about, you know, being an injured soldier. We did that discussion. And I think last week we talked about, should we have dropped the bomb? And it came out on the, I actually made up a word last week, which I don't know where in the world it came from. I don't know what an objectionable believer is, but that was a word I heard that I said in the archive. I'm like, what is that? I objectionably believe in what you have to say. But anyway, afterwards, we had a lot of people had contacted people by phone and emailed, and they were talking about stories that they knew about things that happened at Pearl Harbor and everything, and then, you know, some of the things that, you know, we've seen from Vietnam. And, you know, we do want to pay tribute to our military men and women for what they do. And so next week, anyone that wants to call in and give either a story of something that touched them, of something that they've heard in military, or if they actually served, and, you know, how certain things affected them as far as, you know, the bombing of Pearl Harbor. You know, we're losing generations, you know, with time to the people that were, you know, had family that was there, that served, that knew personally of things going on. And we don't want to miss all that. And, you know, a lot of things we can argue about, we can speculate over, and we can try to figure out who's right and who's wrong. But the military men and women who served were not the ones that were wrong. You know, it was people up above them that ordered them to go.
Exactly.
And,
I think,
you know, they were out there.
Love for them. Whatever you feel about whatever war it is, we've all got a soft spot for the military men and women.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was in the military, but I never had to serve in combat. So, you know, and I used to always wonder, you know, how would I react, you know, to incoming fire? You know, what would be my response to losing somebody? And, you know, and there's probably some people that can call in and tell you what it's like. I know Billy lost a friend, you know, in Iraq the first time he was there. And it's kind of hard to get into your little peanut in your brain to comprehend that if you've not been the one that's done it. But it's not one of those things we should just ignore.
Exactly.
That's all you got to say, George? Just exactly?
I thought you were about to say something else. We're on our last minute here. I thought, oh, that's good. He's going to wind everything down perfectly. Everybody visit us on Facebook on our Your Place page. Starla, have you joined us on Your Place?
Not yet.
Calling you on the carpet right on the radio show. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and we are going to come back to our politics, too. There was a few comments made about things, and for those that listen to the archives, you need to read the blog that I responded to some things. I'm still having a hard time understanding the mindset of some of this, and so we're going to start off simple and get into the deep water as we go. But anyway, I want to thank everybody for calling. Joy, as always,
a
pleasure to work with you.
You too.
And I'll try to come up with another song to shock everybody next week.
At least that got us off on a really cheery note.
Yeah, I started to play Love Stinks, but I thought, well, no, that's not good. So.
Ah, then Starla would have just hung up, wouldn't you, Starla?
She's got all kinds of DVDs and CDs and stuff that I make the songs for her. All right, folks, we'll see y'all next week.
Thanks for coming. See you next week.